Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Brian W. Smith, and you're tuned in to another episode of The Scribe Spot. For those who have not listened to the show before, I want to welcome you. The Scribe Spot is a literary radio show where some of the best authors in the country share their thoughts about books and life. Now, no show can go on unless listeners spread the word, so please, please, please pass the word to your friends who may not know about The Scribe Spot. Past guests on the show have been everyone from New York Times best-selling author Kimball Lawson Roby, Sue Grafton, J.A. Jantz, the list goes on. And tonight I am happy to say that we have another very accomplished award-winning New York Times best-selling author on tonight's show. Now, before I go on, I want everyone who's listening to know that the number to call in and speak to the guest is 516-053. Tonight's guest is a New York Times best-selling award-winning author. She is she's a mystery writer who has made her reputation, in my opinion, by stepping outside the box where so many people are focusing on characters here in the United States. This young lady has spent her time focusing on a character overseas, Scotland, and as a result, the series has become widely acclaimed, and her reputation precedes her. I want to thank this young lady for coming on the show because I know that she's extremely busy, but she didn't make time to come here tonight to speak to me on The Scribe Spot. My guest tonight is none other than the incomparable Deborah Crombie. Deborah, thank you for coming on the show.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate it. I know that you are extremely busy, especially since you have a beautiful bundle of joy named Wren, I believe, that's serving as a distraction.
Yes, I have a new granddaughter, my first grandbaby, one and only grandbaby, who was 2 months old yesterday. So she's very cute. It's lots of fun.
I saw the picture. She's adorable.
She is. She is just absolutely adorable. And they're very close, so I get to see her almost every day, and that's terrific.
Well, I tell you what, that's going to be probably a gift and a curse because I don't see how you're going to get to working on now number 17 with that beautiful child within close proximity.
Well, now, it's kind of keeping me home and keeping me working.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, your daughter and son-in-law live here in the McKinney area?
Yes, they do. In the historic district. So it's just great to have them so close.
So I guess there will be no trips abroad anytime soon.
I don't have anything planned actually at all right now. I'm planning to attend BoucherCon, World Mystery Conference, in New Orleans in September, and then maybe October, November, a trip to London. I would like, the last 2 years I've been to London in January, February, or March, and I'd like to go when the weather is a little bit more pleasant.
Yeah, I could see how a beautiful child like that would alter plans. Do you get to see her often?
Yes, I get to see her. I get to see her almost every day. So it's Such a treat. I just got back from a trip to London in actually a week before she was born, because she was a month early. So that was all kind of wild. And but I was in London in almost the whole month of January. And then Wren, my granddaughter, was born on February the 3rd.
Well, congratulations to you. To have a child is a blessing. For that beautiful Wren to become your first grandbaby. I know that she'll be nice and spoiled, probably will never hit the ground between all the time she's spending switching hands. But that's cool. That's a beautiful thing.
We're reading to her already.
Hey, it's in her genes. She can't help it. She'll be an award-winning novelist as well. You know, it's interesting. Your name first came about a year or two ago. I tend to write at a Panera Bread here in the area, and I was in the store one day, and the manager asked me if I knew you. I said I knew of her, and he said, well, she's come in here every now and then and sits right up front. And I said, whoa. So that started a plot for him to try to get with me whenever you came through. But as luck would have it, after that conversation, he never saw you again. So he would never see you in time to contact me, because I was plotting and trying to see how I could get you on the show. Unbeknownst to me at that time, you traveled abroad as much as you do.
Yeah, I usually spend at least a month out of the year in the UK, and then, you know, with book tours and mystery conferences and all that kind of stuff that I'm actually really looking forward to having about 6 months with no airline miles and concentrating on working, and I'm sure that everybody, readers out there, would really like for me to do that.
Yeah, that's how you keep your name out there. You know, what you don't realize is that even though you're abroad doing your travels, you are being talked about right here in your backyard. I teach a creative writing class here in the local area at the college. And last semester, I was trying to get the students to understand the concept of show, don't tell. And I could see that glossed over look in some of their eyes. So I brought in your book to drive home the point, and you could see the light bulb go off. And the passage that I read to them was from your novel, To Dwell in Darkness. And what I read was Detective Superintendent Duncan Kincaid walked to Southampton Road from Holborn Tube Station. His coat collar turned up, neck swaddled in a wool scarf, gloved hands shoved deep in his overcoat pocket. So I said, now what does that tell you all listening to me read that? What's happening in that scene? And they said, it sounds cold. I said, did she ever use the word cold? And they said, no. I said, because she showed you, she didn't tell you. So just know that even while you're abroad doing your travels, your work is serving as a tool for young writers trying to get where you are.
I love that. That's great. I would like to tell the young writers that you don't ever stop working at it. Every sentence, I think about whether I've done what I intended to do with that sentence.
Yeah. And they're learning. They're learning. I mean, but I tell them, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Now, I know from research that you went to Austin College, which is up there in Grayson County. Do you ever get to go back and visit their creative writing students or their English department?
Yeah, I have done a number of times. I'm one of the English professors who retired this last year, which makes me very sad, would have me come usually at least once a semester and talk. She taught a course on detective fiction, and she would have me come and talk to the class, and they would read one of the novels, and it was just huge fun.
Could you ever see yourself, you know, carving time out of your busy schedule to be to hang out in the classroom more?
No, not really.
What's your thing?
No, I don't think I'm organized enough giving talks to be a very good teacher. And because I don't write very fast, it would be hard to squeeze in anything else. I would like to write faster.
Right. So the demands of the industry hasn't changed your writing pattern. You still, you pretty much put out one book a year, right? Have you found the change in industry? Has it forced you to alter your style, or are you pretty consistent in doing things the way you did when you started?
I'm fairly consistent. I think I was a little faster with the earlier books, which the first books in the series are not quite as long as most of the later ones. But it's actually the University of North Texas Library has collected all my manuscripts and notes and materials, and they did an exhibition when they first, you know, received the collection and put it together, and they did an exhibit with my notes and outlines and draft pages from the very first book, and I was surprised, really, to see how similar. You know, I'm a little more technologically sophisticated now. I tend to write in a software program called Scrivener, which I like a lot.
Right.
But my process is still pretty much the same.
Well, you've been able to survive the highs and lows of this industry. It can be a roller coaster ride, as many authors will attest to. During your career, can you recall your lowest point professionally in this career?
Oh, lowest point? Not really. It's been, you know, the books have done gradually better and better over the years. I certainly didn't start out as an instant bestseller, and I was lucky enough very early on in my career to have an editor who believed in giving books a chance to find an audience. I think now if I were just tossed into the middle of the crazy publishing industry, I might sink, but hopefully not. But I've been extremely fortunate with the people that I've worked with over the years, both my agent. I've had the same agent since my very first book, and I've had wonderful editors. So
that helps a lot. That familiarity helps a lot.
It really. I have editors who actually edit, which is huge, huge benefit.
Right. Yeah, it helps a lot to have that type of familiarity. And you're right, it does take a while. As you've seen your growth over the years, do you find yourself wanting to, you're not going to actually do this, but do you ever find yourself thinking about a previous book and maybe saying to yourself, I'd write that one over if I could? Or do you pretty much move on and accept the fact that you are not the same author that you were back then?
I like all the books. Some of them I like more than others. If I could go back and change anything, and I think we talked about this the other day on the group writers blog that I do, Jungle Red Writers, if I had any do-overs, it would probably be the fact that I specifically dated the story and a couple of the books, and I wish I hadn't done that because series time has run so much more slowly than real time. And it's something that I thought about very early with the first books, and then I kind of, you know, went off the rails from what I intended to do, and I wish I hadn't. But other than that, I like the early books. It's always, you know, and I'm going back and forth looking for, you know, trying to make sure I have character continuity and story continuity and all those things. And it's fun to go back and read them again.
Do you have you already mapped out what the next books are going to be, or did you kind of let a little time sink in between releases and make this thing up as you go along, the next titles? I know some people I've spoken to, they can tell you the title of the next three books. Is that how you operate?
Oh, I can't tell you the title of the next three books. I can tell you the title of number 17, which is Garden of Lamentations. But I'm usually thinking, a book or two books ahead, because it helps in a series like this if you can kind of salt the current story with, you know, little things that will set up the next story or the one after that. So I have a lot of ideas for the next book. I think I know what the next book is going to be about. And then I have a couple of, we've got a file on my computer where I kind of put, you know, the something book and the, or the something book, and throw it in ideas I have about different settings or characters that I want to write about. So I'm usually thinking at least a little bit ahead.
So you say the Garden of Lamentations?
It's called Garden of Lamentations.
Lamentations. Tell us about that.
It will be out, I hope, in winter of 17. It will be book number 17, so that's kind of appropriate, I guess. And there's a couple of storylines going, and listeners may not know that my characters are both detectives with the Metropolitan Police, and they are now, have over the course of the series, married and have a blended family. So it's fun to, you know, sort of switch back and forth between storylines. But Gemma, my female character, is investigating the death of a nanny in one of the private gardens in Notting Hill. And Duncan is dealing with some stuff that goes back to things that had happened in the previous couple of books. And
Do you see yourself creating any new series characters, or are you pretty much going to stick with Duncan and Emma?
You know, over the course of 16, 17 books, there have been so many characters that I like and that I, you know, I always want to bring back into the story, but I can't get in every character in one book, obviously. And I have created a couple of strong secondary characters who are also detectives, and so they get to play their names are Doug Cullen and Melody Talbot, and they get to play a fairly major part in most of the storylines. So, you know, there's a lot going on and a lot of people to deal with, and so I'm not really tempted to branch off in a completely different direction.
Gotcha. So I kind of answered the next question, because they would, if you were to do this, they would be spinoffs of your current series, so the setting would still be overseas.
Oh, it would still be London, England?
Right, England.
Yeah, I love writing about stuff in the UK. I started the original book in the series because I had lived in England and Scotland, and I was homesick for England, and I thought, you know, I was back here in Texas, and I really, really missed being in England, and I thought, well, I'll write a story set there. And I just love it. I've never got tired of it. There's always new places to go and new things to learn about, and love visiting. And
Well, the place is rich in culture, and I think, in my opinion, that's one of the things that sets your novels apart from so many novels that are out today, so many series characters that are out today. You are venturing off into a land that's unknown to most readers. So I think that in itself, in an industry that can be so copycat, I think that is one of the main things that sets you apart. So that was a very stroke of genius to do that from the start.
Well, and I never really thought about I was a big fan of some English writers, P.D. James and some others who are fairly well known, but I never set out really to copy a particular pattern, or I liked the structure of classic British detective novels, and I liked the idea of...
Did you grow up a big Sherlock Holmes fan?
Not huge. I did read, and I have my, you know, big annotated Sherlock Holmes book, and I read them, but I wasn't a huge fan.
Well, someone with your own, with your talent, you could definitely write across genres. What made you stick with mystery? Was it just in you, or were you encouraged to go that route and do the industry trends?
I don't know. I read really widely. I read a lot of other things besides crime fiction, but I think writing mysteries, writing crime fiction, just kind of suits my style and the structure and the ability to explore places and characters. And actually, I was a big science fiction fan growing up, but I've never had the least inclination to write it. There's a Sherlock Holmes anthology coming out next September, I think, edited by Laurie R. King, who writes the And I've written a short story for this upcoming Holmes anthology, and that was really fun.
Wow. Well, that's an honor to be asked to be a part of something like that. That's huge.
Oh, it was fun. It was really fun. It's a story set in more or less the present day, but it's a completely different character. Nobody from the world of my books, and just was a lot of fun to do. So maybe I would like branching out better than I think, but in the meantime, I've got to finish the book in progress and get on to the next one and go from there.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, you have a fan in me, and after using your book as an example for several of my students, I think you gained a few fans over at Collin College as well. So I want to thank you so very much for coming on tonight and giving me a little bit of your time, talking about Baby Wren and your future project. And before I let you go, for the listeners out there who would like to see you live and in person, where can they catch you next?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't have anything scheduled in the next couple of months except writing and editing. I will be at BoucherCon World Mystery Conference in New Orleans in September. And and then I will be in the San Francisco Bay Area in early October for the Sisters in Crime chapter there. But that's all I've got on the schedule right now. I suspect that 2017 will be different, and with a new book out, there'll be lots of appearances, but I have no idea what or where yet.
Well, I'm a native of New Orleans, so I'm sure you'll love it. And I lived in San Francisco for several years, my second most favorite city in the United States. So if you got to get out, those are two places to go.
Oh, I love them both, although I haven't been to New Orleans in way too long, so I'm looking forward to it. I think this is going to be a really, really good conference. BoucherCon is the mystery conference to go to, if you're interested in meeting writers and going to panels and all that fun stuff. And I think this one is just going to be spectacular.
Well, as long as you stay stay away from the potent daiquiris, you should remember everything that you encounter while you're there.
I'm looking forward to it. And I think actually my daughter and son-in-law are going to meet me the weekend before with the grandbaby, and it'll be Rin's first trip to New Orleans, so that should be fun.
That should be. Well, once again, Deborah, I appreciate you coming on the Scribes. Where can you be reached on social media for those who want to follow you on Facebook, or if you're doing the Instagram and Twitter stuff?
Oh, I am on Facebook. I have an author page on Facebook. It's just Deborah Crombie. And I think it's Deborah Crombie author. And I am on Twitter, not as often as I would like to be, but it's at Deborah Crombie, all one word.
Yeah. So do you tweet a lot, or, well, you said not as much as you'd like?
I don't,
like
actually.
To.
I'm not very good. I'm not very good at Twitter. I really prefer Facebook. Which probably makes me kind of a dinosaur, but I'm really visual, and I like, not that you can't post pictures on Twitter, but I think I really like the visual aspect of Facebook.
Yeah, it is more intimate. So once again, thank you for coming on the show tonight. I will continue to follow you, continue to support and root for your successes. So thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much, Brian. It was great to talk to you.
No doubt. And hopefully I'll run into you in Panera.
I hope so, too.
Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, that was award-winning, best-selling author Deborah Crombie tonight on the Scribe Spot. Her next book, Garden of Lamentations, should be out in winter of 2017. If you belong to a book club, tell your members about the show. If you're just an avid reader with no book club affiliation, tell your friends who you think will enjoy the show. The link to listen to tonight's show and other past shows is www.blogtalkradio.com/thescribespot. If you go on that link, you can check out tonight's show podcast, and you can see the shows from past weeks. For those who follow me, you'll be able to catch me in 2 weeks. 2 weeks, I'll be in Greensboro, North Carolina, April 23rd. So, 19 days from now. And I'll be appearing alongside NAACP award-winning best-selling author Rashonda Tate Billingsley and Trice Hickman. You can catch us at the Clarion Airport Hotel in Greensboro, North Carolina. Thanks again for supporting the Scribe Spot. Next week, my guest will be none other than Rashonda Tate Billingsley, so make sure you tune in. And until then, that's all for tonight. Please continue to love God, love yourself, and please, please, please do not stop loving books. Thank you.